So this is where they keep the illegal aliens, huh? Oh, welcome, officers.
Welcome to the guys who stood around while people threw hockey pucks at us?
You're gonna come up here talking all that Make America Great crap, you're bound to catch a face full of Canadian tomato.
You are listening to The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
So what are you going to do here? Go for the hat trick?
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
One, two, bring it to the boat. Snoop Doggy Dogg and Dr. Drink is at the dope. Ready to make an entrance, so crack on up.
Before I have to pull the strap off the cut.
Give me the microphone first so I can bust like a bubble. Compton and Long Beach together, now you know you in trouble. Cause ain't nothing but a G-bang, baby. Two bloked out G's, so we're crazy. Death Row is the label that pays, man. Unfadable, so please don't try to fake this. But back to the lecture at hand. Perfection is perfected, so I'ma let them understand. From a young G's perspective. And before me, they got a trick, I have to find a contraceptive. You never know, she could be earning her man, learning her man. And at the same time, burning her man. Now when she burning, I'ma chill for her.
And good evening, folks. Welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show, strictly talking hockey. Glad to have everybody with us tonight as we get set for another chatter-filled hour of hockey madness and craziness and all sorts of goodness that way. But good to have everybody along. Jason, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Yourself?
I'm all right. I'm just adjusting volumes here because it looks like things still aren't set right here. And
had a wonderful Lurie Rail weekend.
You know what? I can't say I had a bad one either. I did a lot of spring cleaning that weekend. Not that I'm, again, that sounds fun or whatever, but to me, I feel like I've cleansed the soul a little bit.
I put a solid 10,000 words into my
Look
current
at
project.
You.
So, yeah.
Look at you. There's going to be another book signing coming up, I feel it, coming up
well,
shortly.
Well, I might have an announcement about that shortly.
Look at you. See, this is what we're talking about. We're going to have some fun with that. Song you're hearing in the background today, something that, again, something to be said for a good remix, a good mix-up. This one bumps. Some Bee Gees Staying Alive, as you can probably hear. And a little Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre rapping over top with Nothing But a G-Thang as it comes up with a pretty solid tune. Whoever put this, I don't even know who put this together. We were talking before the show. There's no credit as to who was the person that applied song A over song B.
Yeah, I guess it's one of the just YouTube like
specialties
mixes,
yeah,
that people do.
For those who don't know, the song Nothing But a G-Thang comes from Dr. Dre's first solo album, the 1992 album called The Chronic. This song reached number 2 on the Billboard Top 100 on March 20th, 1993, and was selected as one of 500 songs that shaped rock and roll as per the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So,
amazing song.
Little bit of fun there with Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg as they rip off this, or not rip off, but they certainly come up with a good song there. The other song behind it, though, you might recognize very well from as being one of the signature songs of the Bee Gees, released in 1977 from the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack and re-released as on their own album. It reached number 1 February 4th, 1978. It was the second of 6 consecutive number 1 singles for the Bee Gees, which tied them with the Beatles as the most of all time until some songstress named Whitney Houston came along and broke that.
Who's that?
I don't know. Whatever. But in 1979, this song won the Grammy for Best Arrangement and Accompanying Vocals, and the album, Staying Alive, went on to win Album of the Year that year as well. So, yeah, congratulations.
A little bit of fun kind of music theory that make why this works really well. Both songs use the same time signature, obviously. The tempo is slightly different, but one of the interesting things, disco has it's pretty well standard. If you listen to it, like most disco songs, they usually go in 4-4 time and they have
right.
the same
yeah.
tempo. That's what made disco so like synonymous.
It's
and it was
danceable.
Yeah,
it was in terms of how, yeah.
Yeah, because and what leads into the rap piece is 4-4 time is just kind of generally with the way like the human heartbeat works
right.
and just like the way our bodies are set up with like electrical impulses in our heartbeat. It's the most natural time signature for the human brain and the human body, so it makes it really good for dancing, and also it's what you generally slip into with rap because it's the tempo that your body naturally wants to fall into.
Well, I gotta say, I'm not a big fan of disco, I'm not a big fan of rap, but put them together and they work really pretty well there.
It's amazing.
So, yeah, so fantastic song there. Some audio magic right there that we heard, but let's get into the hockey here, away from the music theory, despite our appreciation of that, and into the hockey because we're going to start with a story that I don't know if enough people are paying attention to, but legitimately should be laughing at, because it's got all sorts of problems written all over it. And we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, and we brought it up because Monumental Sports and Ted Leonsis had come to an agreement for a $2 billion sports and entertainment complex in Alexandria, Virginia, where Leonsis would cough up a paltry $400 million to basically benefit from something that, that he's going to profit from.
Yep.
So, again, $1.6 billion of public money, bond money, all sorts of stuff that basically the state and again, apparently somebody agreed to over in Virginia.
We know who.
So they're going to move it from, they're going to move the team like 5 miles to the south from Washington, D.C. to Alexandria, Virginia, onto the Potomac, this Potomac Yards area, basically, that was being developed. No big deal. We told you there was some pushback from residents in Alexandria, but it seems that the people that voters in Alexandria and across Virginia put into office are starting to wise up to the economic fallacies that new arenas carry. Jay, I know we talked about a little bit about this before the show started. Let's get into the dirt now, because this is where it gets a little wet and the mudslinging starts as well. So as expected, the Republican-led House of Representatives, the guys who basically came up with the idea for this $2 billion idea.
The Party of Fiscal Responsibility, by the way.
Right, we'll preface it with that. The Republican-led House of Representatives in Virginia passed the bill containing the more than $1 billion of spending needed for the Monumental Sports Complex. And that likely tickled Republican Governor Glenn Youngkin in all the right places after he originally proposed this idea to lure the Capitals and the NBA's Washington Wizards to Virginia. So Republican governor basically going, let's do a massive project and spend a ton of money and put my name on it and look what I did.
The party that always says, you know, talks about, you know, fiscal responsibility and balancing budgets and maintaining deficits and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
As soon as it is a vanity project or a bunch of money they can throw at a billionaire, suddenly it's the only way to do something is to spend public money on it.
Well, that's maybe where it stopped. Things are going to get very uncomfortable in Virginia's things are going to get uncomfortable anyway, was inside the Senate. Democrat-controlled Senate now. Senate President pro tempore, if I can read my own notes here, Senate President pro tempore Louise Lucas. Now, remember that name because she's going to be important here. Louise Lucas said, quote, basically the deal was dead in her eyes on February 12th before it even went to the House for a vote, that she legitimately wanted no part of it. And added that, quote, Republican Governor Glenn Youngkin isn't collaborating with Democrats who are concerned about the level of financial risk, unquote. What? Wait, what? Did you just say a Democrat and financial risk in the same sentence?
Yes. Yes.
Wait, I thought the Republicans were the fiscally conservative ones.
Oh, weird.
Quote, I am not going to allow the government to endanger the Commonwealth's stellar bond rating on my watch, Lucas stated matter-of-factly on a February 12th committee meeting. Quote, I will not allow a billionaire to build his company's wealth on the taxpayer's dime, unquote.
And his personal wealth as well.
That right there, folks, might be the boldest statement from a politician we've ever heard.
Because you can
resulting in public money going towards an arena.
Exactly. Because that's literally what it is you are diverting public taxpayer money to the wealth of an individual. You're just giving him billions of dollars in terms of his net worth, because he can then turn around and use that as leverage for loans and other things.
And we've seen that happen multiple times in multiple studies, that basically the only person that benefits is the guy who owns the arena.
Yes.
So no surprise there. Now, so again, Louise Lucas seems to have a good grasp on how economics work in terms of what's going to happen.
And it was a vanity project by the governor.
Well, yeah. That brings us to this week, where on Sunday, the Virginia Senate gave a first look to its budget proposal. Several key items were missing from that budget, though, most notably any mention of an arena complex in Alexandria. So the Senate put forth its budget and said, here's what we're going to spend money on, and had nothing in there about Ted Leonsis.
Yep.
Okay, smart move. I'll give them credit for that. Now, it should be noted, Arlington Senator Barbara Favola came out and said, look it. Just because it wasn't in there, don't worry about it. It's not that it's dead. She said, quote, the arena project is still going through lots of review. As I understand it, the bill in the House on the arena project does have a reenactment clause. This would give us time to study the project, unquote. So basically, Democrats are saying, we're not totally against it, but we need a lot more time to go over the numbers. Okay, that's fair.
You need to make it make sense.
Right, that's fair. Nobody said that it's going to have to die immediately, but it'd be best if it did.
Yeah,
just saying that.
Yeah, because literally, that quote, the governor's just doing this so he can point at it and say, I did that, and slap his name on it, and that's his legacy.
So Democrats are kind of holding this up right now. Okay, so so if you're listening at home, a little bit of political pushback. Okay. Yep. The people of Alexandria also spoke up as dozens of residents had their voices heard on Monday during the President's Day Parade in Old Town. Mm-hmm. A group called the Coalition to Stop the Arena protested Monumental Sports' attempt to move the Washington Capitals and the Wizards to the sports arena in the Potomac Yards that's been proposed. John Brailt of the National Consumers League said, quote, "This is a passion project for the governor, and he is trying to define his legacy with a project onto the taxpayers of Virginia and the citizens of Alexandria," unquote. There's mm-hmm. there's the exact quote stating this is a passion project.
Yep. Exactly.
So now the people are against it. We already knew the people were kind of against it anyway. There were already people speaking out against it in terms of residents that live around there. Now we actually have a group, a named group, that's mm-hmm. against it. Now you might be thinking, okay, well, that's not really going to do much.
It's
like, who
it's
cares?
Like group no in Tempe.
Well, yeah, exactly.
They're like, we don't want this.
Here's where they're going to run into major problems mm-hmm. because, as you know, there's lots of jobs to do in building arenas. Influential labor groups announced Tuesday that they are opposing efforts to make this project a reality, citing in part an apparent inability to reach a satisfactory deal for union workers on the construction projects. The Northern Virginia AFL-CIO and member unions, including Unite Here Local 25, which represents hospitality workers in the National Capital Region, say they tried to reach a deal with JBG Smith, the real estate developer on the Potomac Yard parcel in Alexandria where the arena would be built, and financial advisor JP Morgan to enter into a project labor agreement that would ensure organized labor is used to build the facility and include job protections. The group also sought a labor peace agreement to help ensure that the workers at the proposed hotel that is part of the project would be able to unionize once built. So basically, labor unions now are going, you haven't guaranteed us jobs, you haven't protected those jobs, and you haven't given us the right to unionize once those jobs are done and there's mm-hmm. jobs going to be handed out.
Yeah.
No guarantees here.
Exactly. So they're not, if
you're a labor union, you want those guarantees. That,
yes.
That says we're looking out for our members.
Exactly. We want people to have jobs, and we want them to be secure in those jobs.
So they go on. Virginia Diamond, president of the Northern Virginia AFL-CIO, said in an interview, quote, "To date, there has been no interest at all on the part of this developer to consider signing agreements that would protect the rights of workers," unquote. So if you haven't spoken to the labor unions about this, and again, maybe that's coming. Maybe that needs to, if you're not going to pass the bill, why speak to the unions?
But you would probably want to do it beforehand so you can get them on board.
Right, there you go.
Because then you get your union members on board who are people that vote.
Oh, we got more union problems, though. Greg Ackerman, president of the local building trades unions, said, quote, "Wage theft and exploitation of immigrant workers are common on construction sites in Northern Virginia. The developers of this entertainment district have refused to take the necessary steps to prevent this," unquote.
Yes.
That's probably a pretty damning statement right
yeah.
there.
Yeah. Well, it's a truth. It happens all over the place where they will take these people because they will work for literally nothing.
So Northern Virginia AFL-CIO, what was the other group that was there? Unite Here, Local 25, and the local building trades unions are all against this project already.
The kind of the people you want on board.
So now we have Democratic politicians, the people of Alexandria, some of the people of Alexandria in terms of this group, and most of the labor unions against this.
Yes.
Okay. So this is going well then, in other words. However, we still have more headaches to go through.
Yep.
Adding to the mounting number of headaches that Ted Leonsis is facing is the mayor of Washington, D.C. and the Honorable Muriel Bowser. Now, again, might go, who cares? Like, she's just the mayor. What is she going to do? She wrote an op-ed that ran in the Sunday, February 11th edition of the Washington Post, where she stated, quote, where she urged Monumental to quote, "consider the city's offer of $500 million to be used to renovate Capital One Arena in Washington. If Monumental leaves for Virginia..."
Still half a billion dollars.
"If Monumental leaves for Virginia, Bowser said the city will enforce the terms of its lease," unquote. Now, in this, and from what I understand, and again, I didn't read through the entire setup, but basically Bowser is proposing that the entire downtown area be upgraded, be renovated, yeah. be re-beautified in terms of what's gone on. There's some crime down there. There's a whole bunch of stuff. But basically she's saying, because everybody works down there, we need to make this place better. So if I'm going to give you $500 million to basically upgrade, renovate the arena, make it a place that people want to come back to by investing in and around the arena.
It's kind of this. It's a setup similar to what True North is doing here in Winnipeg, where they're buying up properties. They're helping, you know, developers that are owning, like the Hudson's Bay Company building. They're helping with the development of that.
Yeah.
They're building a bunch of high rises. They took
the hotel across the street. Yep. They did, you know, they're doing the office building where the True North Square is now. Like, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on now. Anyway, so basically the same idea. However, she didn't mince words about the steps the city was willing to take if Leonsis chooses to leave Capital One Arena, writing, quote, "But let me be clear, the city owns the land under Capital One Arena and will own the building should Monumental break its lease," and used Leonsis' own words against him when she added, quote, "It's only right that DC's team stay in DC. Leonsis has previously acknowledged the huge responsibility that comes with owning a team, saying, as quoting Ted Leonsis here, the teams really aren't owned by me and my partners. They're really owned by the city itself," unquote. So when you basically frame what a guy has said about the teams that he owns against him, not a good look for the owner.
You're saying a billionaire is speaking out of both sides of his mouth? I am shocked.
Somehow it happens. I don't know how, but it does.
Like,
so we now have, well, hold on, we now have state, city, and city you're trying to leave basically saying, we don't want you here.
Yeah.
Or, like, we don't want you in Virginia at all.
What would be hilarious? I mean, it wouldn't be hilarious for the players, but it would be such a shot at Ted Leonsis for the city to just, if they break the lease, say, well, you're leaving. We're taking the rink then because you're leaving and you're breaking your lease.
That's essentially what
Bowser
said.
So you have nowhere to play.
Right. That's essentially what Bowser told her, that if you break the lease in 2026, we own the arena.
I guess you're going to play at the, what university is, the University of Maryland. You're going to be playing out of the University of Maryland with the, I don't know, with the Turtles?
I don't know. They're, I mean, I don't even know if they have a rink there, though. Like, that's
they
the thing.
They do, because they have a, they don't have a
club team?
Yeah, they have a club team.
Oh, well, whatever.
Yeah.
Try to fit 18,000 people.
They have some crazy.
That's the new Mullet Arena. Thank you.
Exactly. And it's even smaller.
So Ted wasn't going to let a little thing like state and city government slow him down in his effort to move to a different state and set up shop, though. Ted decided to go out on his own to prove to everybody.
Oh, he's going
to
use his own money to do it?
No, not yet. No, hold on. He decided to go out and basically buy his way into everybody's good books by showing everybody how much money that they were going to make. Using an economic impact study released by the city of Alexandria, he projected, or his team anyway, used that report to project a net fiscal impact of $760 million over 30 years for Virginia, with $464 million earmarked for Alexandria itself. The study further illuminates, the study further illuminates the potential creation of 29,000 jobs statewide. How the hell does the rest of the state benefit from the Washington Capitals playing in Alexandria?
They don't.
Anyway, the study further illuminates the potential creation of 29,000 jobs statewide, including 22,000 within Alexandria, promising a major boost to the local economy. As you know, and as we've illustrated many times on this program, though, none of this is true based on decades of studies. But again, don't let that deter you, Ted. Go ahead and try and convince everybody that you're right.
Oh, you're not going to listen to the scientists and everything? Oh,
the guys, the money guys who actually deal with money daily? No.
Okay, so I just looked it up. So the value you said for the city of Alexandria over 30 years, that is about $13.9 million.
Correct.
Per year over those 30 years.
Yeah.
The operating budget of the city of Alexandria in 2024, $884 million.
So not really a lot of
nothing.
Help. Right.
Literally nothing.
Not really a lot of help, which we've, again, identified many times on this show that there is no economic impact
and
returned.
They want $1 billion for this.
Hold on. So Monumental decided to go out and hire their own people to prove this as well. Because, again, the economic impact statements are all wrong. The studies are all wrong that you guys are talking about. Ted went on a national tirade about how these economic studies are incorrect.
Sure.
Yeah, the decades of studies are incorrect, and you're telling us they're wrong?
Yeah, scientists with, you know, ethics and standards and who put their professional careers on the line studies.
They're all wrong.
They're just making it up.
Wrong. Monumental Sports went out and hired CSL International in 2023 to develop a business model related to the operations of a new arena in Alexandria, Virginia. They might go, okay, well, that sounds like common business. Here's the problem with that, though.
So you hired consultants, great.
For those who haven't heard of CSL International, this is a key statement from their homepage. It states, quote, We are a solutions-based company that has a proven track record of successfully delivering best-in-class services for the most visible and iconic venues, destinations, and sports teams across North and South America, unquote. If you ask me, it sounds a little self-serving in terms of what they're doing.
Oh, so you want to trust the people who will directly benefit from this to give you an accurate answer?
The guys who,
that's not a conflict of interest?
The guys who deliver best-in-class services for the iconic venues and sports teams are going to not deliver that for you? Is that what you're...
They're not going to tell you
that... Oh, right, they're being paid to deliver that.
Yeah, they're being paid for it, and also they're not going to tell you that the thing that they're promising to do is going to make you a ton of money?
So CSL, who decided that they needed a little bit of number company behind them in terms of getting stuff going, hired HRNA advisors. Now, again, a company like HRNA is just a number crunchers, and they just take the numbers that they're given and put them through a model. Yeah. Like, that's what they're paid to do. That company actually did a little bit of number crunching based on CSL's projections, who used the impact analysis for planning input-output model. Now, again, this is IMPLAN. If any of you are in the economy business, this is IMPLAN. So economists know of this setup. It was created by MIG Incorporated to analyze the project, and it was used to analyze the project's economic impacts from both construction and annual ongoing operations at the full build-out of the Potomac Yards area. So basically, if the complex was built, what would we see in terms of generating income?
Yeah.
Right? Well, there's a huge problem here. Huge problem.
I've already identified many problems, but go on.
See, the problem, if you're going to do an economic model, is that you should probably have economists maybe help you out a little bit.
Yeah.
The John Locke Foundation, which is an independent nonprofit think tank working for truth, freedom, and the future of North Carolina, found in 2017, that's 7 years ago, this is published on the internet, found in 2017 that, quote, rights to use the models are purchased by professional consulting firms who are hired by the interest groups to do the studies. Furthermore, seldom do those who actually perform the studies have formal training in economics, unquote.
So, first off, you're doing economics research without economists, which is a big red flag. Here's another thing, and this goes for literally, if you are listening to this, if you ever go and you hear a politician bring up a study that was done by a firm, like a KPMG,
right,
for instance.
Right, yeah.
Any special interest group, any lobbyist group that comes out and says, look at this study that we commissioned. Look at this study. Those people are paid to tell you what they want you to hear. They do not. They are there to just be yes men and find a way to make the numbers work.
Oh, it gets worse. John Locke Foundation absolutely torched this, not this specific one, but torched the model that they were using. They found that what the implant cost doesn't do is account for the cost incurred or input. I guess the implant reports the model, excuse me, implant model doesn't do is account for the cost incurred with each dollar spent. And the John Locke Foundation hammered this home by writing, quote, all major economic impact models use what's called an input output analysis. This analysis starts with quite complicated tables or matrices showing economic relationships between industries, unquote, showing where, again, quoting them, predictions are made on how spending that starts in one industry originates from the government will have effect on other industries, unquote. Now, people are going to go, well, yeah, that makes sense. If you buy textiles, it's going to end up making more clothes, which will then, again, I understand what they're trying to do here.
The logic makes sense.
But the impact of an arena in terms of spending money on construction companies doesn't mean that money stays in that area.
Yeah.
That construction company can then use that money anywhere else they want where they're hired.
That's a problem. Also, you are talking about incredibly complicated data sets here.
Right.
You're talking about incredibly complicated relationships.
And as they said, complicated tables or matrices.
Yes. And there are a lot of assumptions that are baked into models like this that just assume that things are going to work out the way that they say they're going to work out.
Okay, so here's where the math gets fun because they actually provide an example. And this is where things get bananas. And so if anybody's listening to this and has any idea about how an economy works, you're going to laugh your butts off.
My brain melted out of my ears here.
Quote, it is through this multiplier process that a dollar spent on a project may, at least within the context of the model, end up contributing many more times to output, earnings, and employment. One study commissioned by the Renewable Energy Lobby based on analysis using the IMPLAN model argues that North Carolina's $72 million in government subsidies, okay, so again, hold on to that number, $72 million in government subsidies has generated $1.4 billion in new output. $1.4 billion in new output.
Where?
This economic impact analysis argues that the government spending on renewable energy products has a fantastically high multiplier of over 19.5. Simply put, they claim that spending $1, one government dollar, yields $19 in economic benefits in return.
Okay, then show me. Where are the receipts?
Can you tell me of any hydroelectric project that's resulted in a 19.5 times return in economic benefits?
No. Because that's not what they're meant for.
So what this analysis does is looks at the amount of energy that's being produced and the amount they could sell it for, but they don't actually bake in the costs of building the dam, flooding the planes that they're going to be doing, moving all the people in those planes in terms of having to relocate people, changing your entire dynamic in terms of how water is received but downstream from that.
Staffing, the hydroelectric dam, a ton of acquisition costs.
Maintenance costs, all that stuff. None of that gets baked in. So the 19.5 is correct in terms of the profitability they probably had, but it bakes nothing in for any of the costs they have. There's no net return at this point.
They literally claw out all of the extraneous costs and assumptions and go with as little as possible so they can cook the books to say it's as big as they could possibly. Like, so, here's a perfect example, a Canadian example. One of the most profitable government programs. This has been proven time and time again, and it is one of the most effective subsidy programs, is the child tax benefit.
Right, yes.
It is famous because for every dollar that the government puts into it, they get $2 of economic activity out of it. So they effectively double the money.
That's a two times multiplier.
A two times multiplier. And that is one of the most effective and efficient subsidy programs in an entire country.
19.5 in North Carolina, apparently. So in short, the John Locke Foundation basically concludes that, quote, economic impact studies are not a measure of economic well-being or improved social welfare. At best, what they do is they provide a measure of spending flows as they move out of some industries and areas of the economy and into others. They tell us nothing but the relative efficiency of those spending flows, unquote.
You're assuming in that model that the money is flowing between companies within a very small geographic area.
So let's turn this on its head then and go back to the CSL report, because that CSL report shows how the state and city can recoup $1 billion in investments, and not surprisingly because of how flawed that model is, how the city and state can make, quote, $2.8 billion, most of it from income taxes and city property taxes.
Where are you getting these new
What city
properties?
Has ever made $1.8 billion off a $1 billion investment in property taxes?
Are you, so you're building one new building.
Well, you're building a whole complex, but it doesn't really matter. For tax revenue to grow, you need new income and new property to tax. There isn't new income and new property being taxed here. They're the same construction workers that were paying taxes before. It's the same property you were taxing before.
It's the same employees that are going to be working in the complex. You're not bringing in new people. You're not creating value here.
Here's the other problem. City property taxes, for example, are generally used to pay for things like schools for the people who move into a development or in and around an area. Mm-hmm. Basically, they're used for social programs in a city. But if they're being treated as if they'll be able to be repaying the share of the Alexandria cost of construction, you can't spend the money twice.
Yeah.
So
a city's operating budget and a state or a national operating budget, that money, it's not sitting in an account. It is spoken for. It is being used to fund things.
So if you're not paying off the construction costs and you're paying for schools, that construction cost is now a negative on your budget.
Yes. let's not mince words here.
What is the idiocy that's built into this report is baffling.
Like, the Alberta government is right now dealing with the fact that they have a crazy surplus from the oil and gas industry, like going bananas over the last few years. And they have to figure out what to do with that money. And they have a heritage fund that they put a bunch of money into. And it's a slush fund for, like, you know, if a pandemic happens and they need to shut things down and need to spend money on a bunch of stuff to keep the lights on. Stuff like that happens. That is an incredibly rare occurrence that a state, provincial or federal or city government, will have that size of a surplus that they can just divert millions of dollars to something.
But can they, though? Because as it stands right now, with the cuts we're seeing in Alberta, education, healthcare, and all that kind of stuff, with the cuts in Calgary that we're seeing to all the social programs, for them to be able to pay for a stupid new arena, are we really talking about a surplus? Are we talking just about a bump, a bubble in terms of how, hey, you might have made a few extra bucks this year. Maybe don't go spend it all in one place.
That's exactly what it is. And a lot of the commentary coming out of Alberta is like, hey, maybe we should like use this money and like invest it in the province to like make sure that like we don't have to worry about the oil and gas industry forever and the weird rises and falls of that. But that's a completely different conversation.
So the too long didn't listen if you were just kind of tuned out. Our economists 101 class here. This isn't going well for Leontes or Governor Youngkin in terms of a number of different fronts. And call me crazy, but what if a billionaire like Leontes just paid for the new arena on his own?
Yep.
Like, why not?
Yeah. Like, you know, you have your net worth is you've got billions of dollars. Like, you don't have billions of dollars sitting in an account, obviously. But you could you use your net worth and your you know the assets that you have. You leverage against those assets to the bank and say, hey, give me the money to build this rink, and you'll go and do it. That's how billionaires do things.
The thing that surprises me, and this goes to the same thing for Tempe as well when they had that debate there, why do we have to build everything all at once? Why can't you just build an arena there and then start generating money from there to build something else beside it?
No, because they want it all now. Because they want to maximize the profits that they're making right now.
What's that old saying about Rome not being built in a day?
There you go. here's like my final thought about it. Like, I am in meetings with consultants constantly.
Right. Yeah.
And I work with like some very like some boutique consulting firms and they do really good work and like
of course, yeah.
You know,
yeah, yeah.
My job is I sit there and I keep them honest more or less. Because when they
We're not complaining.
Yeah. So when they I'm in meetings with consultants and they talk about all of these models and all these things that they can do and I sit there and ask, "Okay, well, how does the math work? What's your methodology? I need to see this so I understand how it works. I want to know how the sausage is made." And the moment they tell me it's proprietary and we can't tell you, the meeting is over. I'm not working with you because I need to know that this works the way it's supposed to work and will give me credible results, because if it doesn't, it's just garbage in, garbage out.
Well, and I mean, I'm not in no way, shape, or form, I disagree with you on that. But essentially, there's been a number of economists who have jumped on board on this and said that's exactly what the implan model is. Because it's an input-output model, it's basically garbage. If you feed it garbage, it will give you garbage on the on the outside.
If you feed it what you want to hear back.
So, I'm not saying they're not going to get an arena built in Virginia, but I don't think they're going to get an arena built in Virginia anytime soon.
No.
Like, this is going to have to, you're going to have to sway a ton of people.
Literally, the model is built where whatever number you put in, it just multiplies it by a random value and spits it out.
But this is what I mean. Like, you're going to have to legitimately convince state Democrats, city residents, all sorts of labor unions, all sorts of economists, a number of people that live and work in Washington, D.C., including the mayor, that this is a good idea. And I don't think you're going to get anybody on board for that.
Hey, and a pair of two dummies on a podcast.
Two dummies on a radio show that also think it's stupid to use public money for arenas, but whatever. We're about halfway through the show. I just passed halfway point, actually. I'll give you a quick update here. You might remember Boston Bruins forward Milan Lucic got himself in a little bit of trouble in November after being arrested and charged with assault and battery on a family member, as he and his wife had a bit of an altercation following Lucic coming home after a night of intoxication. Well, we have an update. 6 days ago, Massachusetts prosecutors dropped a domestic violence charge against Boston Bruins forward Milan Lucic on Friday, saying the decision by his wife, Brittany, to invoke marital privilege made it impossible for them to prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt. So basically, his wife opted not to testify in the matter, and the motion by the prosecutors to admit the 911 call evidence that was into evidence, was denied, and that forced prosecutors basically to drop the charges.
So this is the main reason why domestic violence is among the least prosecuted crimes in, not just in Canada or in America, but the world, because you are a victim to somebody who you love, who you live with, who you are potentially dependent on for income and stability and all of these things. And a lot of the times, this happens a shocking amount of times because this happens between intimate partners all the time, and they don't want to press charges because they don't want the person that they love getting in trouble.
So I'll say this, and I'm not trying to minimize anything that happened that night, because obviously it's bad what happened if she's calling the police in terms of having the police come over. Milan Lucic is a big dude as well. Like, he's not like he's, you know, pushover in terms of what he's going to do. But if Milan Lucic entered the player rehabilitation, the player program through the NHLPA, the player assistance program, and he's actually getting treatment for his anger or whatever the problem was, or his drinking or whatever the
is
combination.
He in player
assistance? Yeah, that's how he basically got away from, because he basically admitted he had a problem and he entered it the same day he went to court, basically. If he's actually doing that and he's getting better and his wife is recognizing that he's getting better, I have nothing against Brittany dropping those charges.
Yeah, they want it to be a family matter.
Right, which is fine. My issue, though, is that, again, it doesn't clear up the fact that he did it. And I'm not one to believe that a leper can change his spots either. I'm not saying that Lucic is ever going to do it again. If he's being trained not to do it, if he's being behaviorally altered in terms of this assistance program, fantastic.
Yeah, he's going through counseling.
Right.
And he's making the changes that he needs to make sure that it doesn't happen again. That's what you hope.
As per Steve Conroy of the Boston Herald, the Bruins have confirmed that Lucic will remain on an indefinite leave of absence from the Bruins for the remainder of the season.
Which is a very respectable move from the Bruins. Like, give him the time that he needs, and also ensure that even if he wants to come back, he can't.
Right. And I'm not
basically
again,
tell him, like, go sort this out.
Figure out everything you need to figure out, and then we'll look at next season. Like,
exactly.
we don't need you as much as you believe. Maybe he wants to be back. Mm-hmm. We don't need you coming in with that cloud around you. Just get it sorted.
Yep. And this is an organization that's been through the ringer with issues the last few years.
Yes.
So it makes total sense that they're going to be, like, keeping him at arm's length for right now.
Speaking of keeping guys away from the team, last Thursday, the Columbus Blue Jackets finally made the move that has the potential to improve their team as they fired general manager Jarmo Kekalainen. Jay, I know you've been calling this for a long time, calling for this for a long time, but 11 seasons for Jarmo Kekalainen in Columbus, and we really saw nothing come of it. Mm-hmm. Quote, "This is one of the hardest days I've had in my career, as Jarmo's a friend, someone I have a great deal of respect for, and someone who has done a lot of good things here during his time here," team president John Davidson said in a statement. That's up for debate.
He should be fired
quote, "While the future of our club is bright," I don't think so. "Our performance has not been good enough," understatement of the year, "and it's time for fresh perspective as we move forward," unquote. I would say so.
Like, this is a team that brought in Johnny Gaudreau. They brought in Patrick Laine. They've done a whole bunch of stuff. They've drafted some pretty good-looking prospects, and they have goaltenders that have, like, the capability to at least be, like, dependable starters.
Okay, so here's the catch, though. They've made 5 playoff appearances with 1 round and 1 qualifying round one in 11 seasons.
Yep, the bubble playoffs do not count as a series win.
4 of those playoff wins came under one coach, Mr. John Tortorella, which means that the other 4 coaches that you've employed over that time, because there's been 5 coaches in 11 seasons there, have not won a round, have only won 1 round.
Yep. It wasn't even, well.
Yeah, because the five playoff appearances came with John,
Torts.
Well, 4 of those appearances came under Torts.
Yeah, Torts, who is doing the exact same thing he did in Columbus with Philly right now. The Torts effect is in full swing.
Kekalainen ends his run with Columbus with 410 wins, 362 losses, and 97, I guess, ties or single points in 869 games as well. So not good. Do you want to hear some of his moves, though? You were talking about some of the good moves he's made. Do you want to hear some of the moves that he's made over his time? We'll start with the good ones. We'll start with a couple of the highlights. He did trade Brendan Saad to the Blackhawks for Artemi Panarin,
which was a good trade.
Okay, not a problem. Looking at it, people were angry at the time about it. I know I was, because of who we got back. But again, he traded Pierre-Luc Dubois for Patrick Laine and Jack Roslovic. Improved the team immediately.
Yep.
Addition by subtraction on that one.
The same thing the Jets did.
I don't know if you can put many other trades into that category, but let's look at some of the ones that he made that you go, what were you thinking? He traded Derek Brassard, Derek Dorsett, and John Moore to the New York Rangers for Marian Gaborik. For the record, Gaborik played parts of a season and a bit with with Columbus. He played 34 games, scoring 9 goals and 13 assists.
And he had injury problems before he got to Columbus.
Jarmo Kekalainen traded Jonathan Marchessault and Dalton Smith to Tampa Bay for Dana Tyrell and Matt Taromina.
That is so painful.
Tyrell went and played a total of 3 games with no points for Columbus. Taromina never even dressed for the club.
The number of teams who just like looked at Jonathan Marchessault and just completely overlooked what he was.
And well, look at Florida gave him away as well.
Florida gave him away. Tampa gave him away.
Right.
I think the Leafs had the pick that was used to draft him or something like that.
Yeah.
And then he goes to Vegas, wins the Conn Smythe, wins the Stanley Cup, is just literally the poster child of that organization.
But he's legitimately the new Marty St. Louis. I mean, he's a smaller guy.
Yeah.
Kind of got a little bit of a late break in terms of his career, and then all of a sudden put it together.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know, whatever. And then because of salary cap constraints, was forced to trade Oliver Bjorkstrand to Seattle Kraken, where Oliver Bjorkstrand was an all-star this year.
Yep.
Should also be noted that underneath Kekalainen, all of Sergei Bobrovsky, Artemi Panarin, Josh Anderson, and Seth Jones asked to be moved out of the city of Columbus during his reign, not because they didn't want to play there, but because of the front office.
Yes. And this is a trend that is very visible. So Columbus has, we were talking about this before the show, they have a golden situation right now. You know, for all the jokes, it's the same situation that we see here in Winnipeg. It's the same situation that happens in Minnesota. It's the same situation that happens a lot in Buffalo, weirdly enough. For all the jokes that people make about, like, who wants to play in Columbus? Who wants to play in Winnipeg? Who wants to play in Minnesota? Who wants to play in Buffalo?
Right.
The guys that show up fall in love with the city and want to stay. They want to stay in the organization. They want to. They leave not because they want to leave the city, because it's cheap to live in these places. Usually, it's low key. Fans really support the teams. Columbus does get a ton of fan support, like underratedly, a well supported team. They have made such a terrible environment with the front office. Not about the coach, because it's not. People like to point at John Tortorella and say he was the problem. He was the problem for Pierre-Luc Dubois because he made Pierre-Luc Dubois play hockey. something he seems incapable of doing for a sustained period of time. Guys want to be in Columbus. They show up, they fall in love with the city, and they don't want to leave. These guys wanted out not because of the city, not because of the players around them. They want it out because of Kekalainen and the rest of the front office. You have the amazing opportunity where guys will come and they will stay. But you have the exact opposite problem that Ottawa has, where guys come in, they want to stay, and you're not willing to pay for them to stay.
But again, the problem becomes, though, is that you're overpaying for guys now because you're so worried about them leaving. Again,
yeah.
But let's just run down the list, though. You gave Johnny Gaudreau $9.75 million until 2029. You gave Zach Werenski $9.583 million until 2028. You gave Damon Severson $6.25 million until 2031. And Patrick Laine is going to make $8.7 million until 2026. Like, that money right there is...
They want it to start.
That's insane in terms of how much money you threw at 4 guys.
Johnny Gaudreau picked that team.
Right. No, Johnny Gaudreau did not pick that team. Johnny Gaudreau's wife picked that team.
Yes.
She wanted to play. She wanted to be in Columbus to work at the Children's Hospital. So Johnny Gaudreau was going there.
He was going there. You didn't need to pay that much.
Right.
Jack Roslovic is from Ohio. He wanted to be there. It's an Alex Tuck in Buffalo situation. He wanted to be there. Patrick Laine just wants to play hockey and be left alone.
Which he's not getting done in Columbus now because of the latest podcast issues, which I'm not talking about. Yeah, but anyway, there's a lot of wiggle room for improvements when you have legitimately $35 million tied up in 4 players.
Yes,
like that's insane.
And they made like it's just a baffling series. Like it's been year after year after year of these awful decisions.
And then Elvis Merlikins wants out now.
Yeah. And they're not going to trade him because they can't get good value for him because the team is god-awful around him, so he's not winning hockey games.
18, 27, and 10. They're last in the Eastern Conference at 46 points. This is a team. Fourth worst in the NHL right now.
This is a team that, I'm not even going to say the team. This is an ownership group who went out and hired Mike Babcock without talking to anybody who
would
have said no.
Hold on. I don't know, because management doesn't get involved in a lot of stuff in Columbus, though. Like, the one sort of non-complaint that everybody has, the one sort of compliment, I don't want to call it a compliment, but, like, when John Tortorella was there, he was like, we never heard from management. Like, it was like, you guys just do your jobs, and we'll leave you alone. And so when guys like John Davidson and guys like Jarmo Kekalainen get together and they go, what about Mike Babcock? We should bring in Mike Babcock. Like, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Like, John Davidson should have taken the bullet for that one.
Yes, he should have.
But, again, somehow he
John Davidson should have taken the bullet for a lot of things.
Well, yeah.
Like, coaches generally have one bullet, and that is fire the coach, bring in a new guy, hope he works out and wins some games. Kekalainen had five bullets.
Again. From Todd Richards, John Tortorella, Brad Larson, Pascal Vincent, and Mike Babcock, the guys that we identified underneath his setup. Of all of those guys, all of them, I don't know if I'd hire anybody except for Tortorella. Like, Pascal Vincent shouldn't. Again, I get he's a great guy. I get that he worked here in Winnipeg. I get that, you know, people in True North loved him. But the guy's a terrible coach.
No, the Moose sucked under Pascal Vincent.
And guess what? So does Columbus.
Yeah, weird. Weird how that happened.
Funny how you go from being a terrible coach in one city to a terrible coach in another.
Maybe you shouldn't hire a guy based on vibes.
Well, Mike Babcock. What?
The worst vibes. Like, literally, they went to one of his best friends in Ken Hitchcock and the golden boy of the franchise we were talking about earlier, the guy that did not want to leave Columbus but did so he could win a Stanley Cup, Rick Nash, who his only experience with Mike Babcock was winning a gold medal with him at the Olympics. Of course they're going to say glowing things about Mike Babcock.
Well, exactly.
Do your job.
We're not going to – I'm going to play this in a second. We got a longer Melbourne moment coming up here that you're going to kill yourself laughing at because it's ridiculous. Like whatever. I'm not going to preface it yet, but we'll get to it in a second. But I want to get through these last couple stories here. On February 12th, the IIHF Council reviewed the current safety risks that were associated with Russia and Belgium. Or Belgium. Belgium. Russia and Belarus.
Those darn Belgians.
I looked at Bell and I was skipping ahead on the lines and Belgium came up. Russian and Belarus into IIHF sanctioned hockey tournaments again. As you may recall, the IIHF cited safety concerns for players, staff, and fans. And suspended the two countries following Russia's invasion of Ukraine and Belarus' support of the Russian invasion. This new review found that it's not yet safe to have Belarus and Russia back in IIHF tournaments, so their suspensions of the 2024-2025 season will continue, and it means that Belarus is now unable to participate in the 2024 Olympic qualification tournament that happens in August. Mm-hmm. It also means that, again, when the next review comes up, May 2025, it could mean that Russia may get to play in the 2026 Olympics, which happened from February 6th to 22nd, 2026 in Milan and Cortina d'Ampezzo, if I can spit that out, Cortina d'Ampezzo, Italy, but basically doesn't give them a lot of time to get prepared if that's the case.
Let's not dance around the fact they're going to play in the Olympics.
They will play one way or the other. I know that.
They're going to be the Olympic athletes from Russia again.
Yeah, they'll be some the athletes from independent states.
Yes, exactly. They're going to do that again.
Last story that we want to get to here, just because I think it's a big one, and certainly I know Jay, we both have respect for this guy because he's what he's done, and certainly how he's put U Sports on the map. But you like to know Gardner McDougal is the head coach of the powerhouse UNB Varsity Reds program in Fredericton, New Brunswick. McDougal has been in charge of the Reds for 24 years, where he's won 8 U Cups, 11 conference titles, not to mention a Memorial Cup with the St. John Sea Dogs, a job he had 3 months to prepare for, a FISU gold medal. He led the Reds to a perfect 30-0 record this season, and he became the winningest coach in U Sports hockey history this month with 489 wins and counting. I believe he got to 490 with that 30th win as well, so that number will continue to go up in terms of however long he wants to stay for. For comparison reasons, Hockey Hall of Fame head coach Claire Drake coached for 28 years, only won 6 U Cups, and won 17 conference titles. I got to ask you, Jay, and I know what your answer is probably going to be because it makes zero sense if you say the opposite, but is Gardner McDougal going to the Hall of Fame?
He should be in there already.
There you go. That's what I
like. He put him in as a builder, or whatever, a coach. Like, don't wait for the final numbers to come in. It's going to be absolutely ridiculous when it happens. Like, he's just like, they're going to steamroll Nationals this year.
Well, maybe UBC could provide maybe four or 5 minutes worth of pushback, but that's about it.
Yes, exactly. Like, who's going to beat them?
Well,
he's going to pass Claire Drake in the conference titles.
Oh,
as
yeah,
well.
He will, yeah.
Give him a couple of years, because who's going to beat UNB right now? Saint FX, Acadia.
Well, nobody. But that's the problem.
Moncton? Like,
but that's the problem though. Like there, this guy has built such a program that he doesn't need to recruit anymore. Like, guys are calling him and going, "Do you have spot? Do you have a spot for me this year?"
Exactly. They can be very choosy about who shows up.
Exactly.
Their standards are very high.
So for those that don't know, though, Gardner McDougal got a start out here in Manitoba. Mm-hmm. For those that may not be aware of this, Gardner McDougal was born in Prince Edward Island. He's the fourth PEIer to coach UNB as well, which a lot of people go, really? I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Doug McLean coached there.
Nice.
Former NHL, who's the other one? Don McAdam was another big one there. Mike Kelly also coached there as well. But yeah, Doug McLean was one, like, was a coach at UNB. But he got to start out here in the 1980s in a little town called Cranberry Portage, which sits north of the pond, southeast of Flin Flon. McDougal had been hired to coach the Frontier College Institute's high school hockey team, and he worked with the Midget Winterhawks program as well in the region. In 1990, he was hired as assistant coach by the Flin Flon Bombers. He'd leave in 93 for an opportunity in Saskatchewan, coaching the Lebrette Eagles in the SJHL from 93 to 96, before returning to Manitoba in 1996, where he was hired as the first head coach in the history of the MJHL's OCN Blizzard.
Yes.
His transformation, obviously you can't transform an expansion team, but his work with this expansion team was incredible. They built towards a Turnbull Cup championship in their third season of existence with the likes of Jordan and Terrence Tutu leading the way. But the Blizzard posted in their first three seasons, posted records of 33-18-5 as an expansion team, 42-18-1 in their second season, and 53-7-2 in 98-99 en route to the Turnbull Cup championship.
Just monsters.
So he left OCN after that. The Flin Flon Bombers hired him in 1999 as their director of hockey operations, where the squad went 29-27-4. But McDougal wanted to move closer to home again. Like, being out on the prairies is nice, but the good news was he got hired by the University of New Brunswick Varsity Reds men's hockey program at that time. But it was the third time he actually applied for that program to get in there.
Persistence pays off.
Three times the charm, I guess, in terms of what's gone on. And since then, he's been the best coach in the history of Canadian university hockey.
Probably one of the best coaches in Canadian history.
Not a doubt about that. I mean, that dude, again, like you said, should already be in the Hall of Fame. But, I mean, until he retires. Nice to see Yager retire this week, though, and have his number retired by the Penguins. But
he's not retired.
He's not retired yet. No, he just took the weekend off to come in. But I'm going to play this for you right now because, again, this is a news. Again, Nine News Australia is a legitimate news program. Okay. Like, it is a complete, like, straight. I mean, we take a lot of clips from them because they report on some of the goofy stuff sometimes.
Yeah.
This is legitimately, like, paparazzi kind of reporting here.
Okay.
For those that don't know, a specific artist just finished a three concert run in Melbourne and is now moving to Sydney.
Okay.
I'm going to play you this clip now because this is what happened when she arrived. Oh, wait, hold on. Let me get the clip set up there. Clip good. Okay, here we go.
A touchdown of a different kind for three-time Super Bowl champion Travis Kelce today. Taylor Swift's boyfriend jetting into Sydney to catch up with the superstar ahead of her sellout shows. As the final pieces of Swift's stage were put together at Olympic Park, desperate fans logged on for a last-minute ticket release.
A private jet carrying precious cargo. Taylor Swift's boyfriend, Travis Kelce. The Super Bowl champion and his lookalike friend, Ross Travis, touching down at Sydney Airport just before 9 a.m. Dedicated fans lining the fence, hoping to catch a glimpse.
We've stayed overnight last night at the airport and then come here.
Hopefully see Travis and maybe even Taylor.
Meanwhile, on the other side of the airport, Swifties also arrived from overseas.
I came from the Philippines. I think it was 8 hours of flying.
I've come from New Zealand and I'm here to see Taylor.
Kelce wasted no time though, heading straight to Barangaroo, where he was reunited with his lover, who has since made herself at home inside the Crown's presidential villa.
With only one more sleep until Taylor's first Sydney show, Swiftie Mania has ramped up again now with the arrival of her boyfriend. The question is whether he'll attend all four of her sold-out shows.
Woo!
And today, some last-minute hope for those who missed out on tickets, with a surprise sale going live at 4 p.m.
Very excited, very happy.
I'm taking my 10-year-old who's going to just die.
At Sydney Olympic Park, the final touches were put on the stage as fans braved long lines and the sun to snatch up some merch. In Barangaroo, Erin Ramsey, Nine News.
Okay, hold on. Now, hold on. Before you go on, we understand, I'm fully aware of how crazy Swifties get and how the whole nation goes crazy.
The whole time I was just thinking about the carbon footprint of all these people traveling to hold on concert.
Hold on. We're not done, though.
Oh, no.
Wait. This is the remainder of the report.
And Erin is in the newsroom tonight with an update on Taylor Swift's whereabouts. Erin, where are Taylor and Travis?
Pete, we've got a visual. Taylor Swift and her boyfriend Travis Kelce are spending the evening at Sydney Zoo in Eastern Creek.
That was filmed today. They have overhead video of somebody flying a drone over the zoo following them around.
Couple spotted walking arm in arm, enjoying an after-hours tour. I'm told they are accompanied by some of her dancers, though.
What?
They've just spent meeting with the koalas. Now, this isn't Taylor's first time at the zoo, though. The star went there yesterday with her entourage, and clearly she liked it so much that she had to take her boyfriend back.
She went to the zoo yesterday.
Thank you.
Oh, wait. Hold on. I'm going to go back to the ending there. Listen to how casually this guy just flips off the report.
Take her boyfriend back.
Good for them. Thank you.
Good for them.
Good for them. Have a nice day. So they were at the zoo yesterday and people knew about it and they're back today and somebody was filming them there. Like somebody was drone flying over top and following them around the zoo. This is a news channel. Just say they were at the zoo. Done. Moving on. No, like, we're not doing that.
Like, she has a GDP. Like, she
is her own nation at this point. Yeah,
like, the amount of money that is just thrown at her is astronomical. And, like, let's just get past the fact that she's flying. She caught so much flack for, you know, taking private jets places that she downsized her fleet, where now she only owns one private jet instead of, I think it was like three or four. But like, it is a level of insanity that I cannot understand.
I mean, I get it. I understand that people get worked up about this young lady and how, because again,
no, I get
she
that.
Represents the whole thing.
But it's like,
okay, hold on. Sydney Park in Australia, or Olympic Park in Sydney.
Yeah,
it seats, again, this is seating in stands, not with all the seating that's going to be on the grass as well. It seats 83,500 people. She has four sold out shows already. Do the math.
Oh my God! And those tickets are astronomically expensive.
Again, I don't I understand how she represents, you know, everything about, you know, about what's good, and she's, you know, she doesn't get into a lot of drama, and she doesn't do, I don't care about any of that. Again, I'm happy that she's a fantastic performer and she's living her life. Mm-hmm. But my God, let her live her life.
Yeah.
Like, that's the part I don't
get.
Leave
her alone. She just wants to go to the zoo with her boyfriend.
Right. See a few animals. No big deal.
He's probably never been to Australia before.
Travis Kelce's probably never been outside. I mean, he's probably been outside the U.S., but who knows, right?
I mean, also, we were talking about Columbus, but he's from Ohio.
Well,
he went to Cincinnati.
I was going to say that one way or the other doesn't really get people excited, I guess, in terms of Cincinnati. But
it's Ohio.
It is Ohio. But end of the day, I mean, again, let her live her life. My God, leave her alone. I know she doesn't come to Australia very often, but my God, give her a break, man. Like, she's trying to have a life with with a guy that she likes, and everybody's all over.
Yeah.
Like, part of the report had them up, like, at the same level as that presidential suite they were talking about, and they were showing, like, all of the rows of clothes, like, hanging against the window, like, the racks against the window.
Like,
and I'm like, how much invasion of privacy do we have to stop at
here? She had to go to the NFL and all of the broadcasters and say, when I'm at a Chiefs game, stop showing me. I don't want to be on camera.
I'm not against it. Again, I understand the hypocrisy of people.
Yeah.
Like, the people getting angry at her for just being her is so wrong. But honestly, just let her be her.
Yeah.
Stop trying to make her into this, like, goddess. I mean, again, she's a fantastic
performer. Stop trying to make money off of her. Let her live her life.
I just don't get why like a news organization has to do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to out of here, folks. We're just about out of time here on the program as we get set here for Free Range Radio, coming in with Skippy coming up next here on 101.5. Jason, anything you want to say before we go?
I mean, it's going to be crazy weather this weekend. And,
up and down all weekend, yeah.
It's going to be plus 13 and then minus 20 on Monday.
Yeah, I don't know how that works, so.
Climate change is how that works.
I guess so, but. That's weather, not climate at this point, but we'll see how bad it gets. With that, folks, we're out of here for another week. Take it easy. Take care. We'll talk to you next week on Thursday. Have a good one, everybody. See you on the show here on 101.5 UMFM.
You understand the situation here.
All right, it's your lucky day.
You're listening to CJUM FM 101.5 megahertz on the FM dial from Winnipeg.
And that is how you do that.
Amazing.
That was kind of impressive.